listeners, and welcome to another episode of the WIP 12 podcast. My name is Thomas, otherwise known as Diomedes on Discord and OTM, and I am here with a couple of guests to talk about another of our sectorial specials. We have Neo Terra for you today, and we have our guests, Sandridis, his name is Dan, and then we have Trent, who is Antipodean Bolt, two lovely people you may have heard of from before. If you'd like to both introduce yourselves for a moment, say hello, Dan.
Hi. My name is Dan. I've been wargaming for a long time, like 25 years now. I started with Warhammer Fantasy Battle, played 40K for a long, long time, playing Iron Warriors, sadly, and Orcs. I picked up Infinity mid-N3 with Red Veil and started with Copper Hockey. And I've been playing Pano since then. I play every flavor of Pano. Mostly I play Svalheimer and Neo Terra, along with a few other oddball NA2s and the like.
Hi, I'm Trent. So Antipodean Bolt, very, very regular on the Discords. So I picked up Infinity when I was working back in a hobby shop back in 2005. Didn't quite settle into it and all. Did the standard GW games of the day, Mark I War Machine and stuff like that. However, I've played Infinity pretty exclusively since 2019. NCA was fundamentally the first force that I picked up during that time in the hobby shop, purely because I was looking for an Australian faction and NCA was it. So that's what I picked up.
It must be pretty unusual to find a specifically Australian faction in any war game or any 100%. Other game, really.
It's very either European focused or American focused, and you just kind of have to go, hey, this is as close as what I'm going to get. So
yeah, it's very cool. I must say, it's one of the things that drew me to the game in the first place. Was, I mean, I will confess, I'm sort of leading this conversation, but I'm not a Pano aficionado at all. But the fact of Pano's existence in the game is quite appealing. Like, it's cool that it's a very unusual way to kind of construe a sort of sci-fi future place, which I guess as a total neophyte myself, it would be cool if you could, one of you could introduce what Neo Terra Capitoline Army is from a fluff perspective and a play perspective, and how they fit into Pan Oceania.
The fluff is all you, so go ahead. You're the fluff man.
So NCA is the Capitoline Army. So if you're looking for equivalency, it'd be like the Imperial Army for Pano. They leverages fire superiority. It is the top tier of the top tier. It gets the most money. It's got all the best equipment. It basically is what vanilla Pano would be if you turned it into a sectorial. It's the closest to the Hexahedron because it's on the same planet. As you could see by it being used as the foundation for the Neo Terran Support Force, or Code Capital, it is the army in effect. So naturally, you're just going to have like all the training schools are on Neo Terra. For example, all the officer training schools, all the tag training schools, even the Svalheimer training school is on Neo Terra prior to them deploying to Svalheimer. So Neo Terra is the capital of Pano itself.
Nice. So yeah, I guess that from a play perspective, as you say, they are high superiority is the number one
priority. 100%.
Yeah. I think the difference between them and Bolt and I talk a lot about Pano being divided into offensive and defensive sectorials, with Varuna and Shock Army being a bit more defensive. And I think to me, what differentiates Neo Terra from Svalheimer in terms of playstyle is that, like Bolt said, it's more of a regular army. Orcs link with Fusiliers. Fusiliers link with remotes because they train together. It's very, you could see it almost being broken down as a company, brigade, battalion style, instead of special forces operators, as Svalheimer would be. And I mean, other playstyle is, it's Neo Terra. You have a gun for every problem you face, like the rest of Pano, but NCA sort of exemplifies that.
Cool. And Bolt, you mentioned Code Capital. We couldn't, of course, get through this sort of revisit of the NCA without talking about reinforcements. The much maligned is maybe strong, but the new format that we've been toying with over the last few months. The reason why we're here talking about NCA and their new units that come with that. But what is Code Capital as an idea?
Code Capital is the response force with NSONG and so forth. The destruction of the circulars, a response force was stood up to enable being able to kind of bail bad situations out. The fluff has it that they're a TV show based upon like the real operations. So it's like units inside that are just representations of that TV show providing support, which is funny, really. But I like what they're attempting to achieve with reinforcements. It bypasses a fundamental PNO, I wouldn't say critical failure state being locked in the DZ, where you can just compartmentalize all of these assets and then dump them straight into the midfield, and then you've got a tag straight there. You don't have to fight your way out. You just go, okay, I've already lost those fights, now I just put it outside my DZ. Good luck. So I like what they're attempting to achieve. The real way it's going to get picked up is if you can cross-pollinate between normal games and reinforcement games. That's the only way you're going to be able to do it. And potentially if your reinforcement pool was private information, because that would provide an element of going. Like, you could see that they've got a reinforcement pool because the Comlink dude is open information, so they know that something's coming. It's just like you don't know what's on the ship until it lands and dudes jump out. So realistically, that's probably the best way to kind of get it taken up. But Code Capital is as a result that forward projection of those assets to go, oh shit, things are going sideways. We need to reinforce.
Cool. All right. Sounds interesting. I like the idea of the TV show. It reminds me a little bit of the background for Steel Phalanx as well, for this sort of the sort of entertainmentization of conflict and war and war fighting and stuff, which is an interesting idea, if not somewhat problematic. But anyway, let's go into the reinforcements sort of pool of units. What do we have that's new to NCA? What do we have that's, you know, existing but is maybe different in some way? Do you want to take it away, Dan? See what stands out to you? What's the most interesting thing?
Well, the most interesting thing, I think, is blockers, specifically for Neoterra, but also for Pano generally. They're an obvious winner. We know orders are good in N4 with a limited model pool and even otherwise, and the ability to get in NCA a wildcard, TAC-aware, mimetic BS-13 engineer is great. The Blade Ops, yeah. They're great. They solve a lot of problems Neoterra had. Within reinforcements and without. One of the biggest issues Neoterra had is that there are certain missions that you hear Pano players talk about, Mind Wipe and the like, that your list building was just restricted by a relative lack of options, and Blade Ops solve it. Almost single-handedly, they solve it. They're fantastic. You can shoot on 10s with automatism out in 8 to 16. I mean, I can't say enough good about them.
Yeah, the fundamental component that I love that they bring to is that you're no longer AVA-1 machinist, you're AVA-3.
Well, there's that too, yeah.
Yeah, it's not even their combat capabilities, it's the fact that if you have two of them, it means that like your opponent can't just deploy a Fide right next to your machinist, and now you have to play very, very differently with your tag. You can just go, okay, you've killed one machinist, I still have another. It may be on separate sides of the table or in a duo or whatever. I can still recover from this. And
it may even have a boost to gizmo kits if it's in a link.
Exactly, yep. Yeah, so it's not so much of a critical vulnerability being that sole point of like that center of gravity where they could just take out the machinist, and now you've just got to really play very cautiously with your tag or any other remote, because now the wounds are going to stick and as a result. So they don't have to win every gunfight. They just have to keep chipping down, and eventually that tag is going to go down and you can't get it back up. So just the fact that they add two more engineers through that AVA-2, like even if it's the forward deployment one, you take normal one and you've got a forward deployed blade off sitting in the midfield, you just run it up and it's like run it up to
that forward deployment's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
What's the application for forward deployment on an engineer? Because I mean, coming from a different faction background for me, what does an engineer do apart from heal bag and, like, and ram?
A very, very specific niche case for acquisition, especially. You have 16-inch deployment. He has forward deploy 8, so he's deploying on the midfield. Like, you could legitimately take two of them, put them prone within like 0.1 mil of the objective, use that tack aware, complete that movement, and then press that button on like burst 2 with 15 without even touching your regular order. That's what it's capable of doing. And then you spend a regular, like, you can spend two, if they're in the same group, spend like a command token, just coordinate, suppress them, and then just go about your day killing everything, and then occupy the middle attack. So it's more along the lines of they're able to respond to the mission. Like, now with these two guys, you've got in the main inventory up to 9 operators which can deploy outside the D set if you take the full AVA. So 3 locusts, Uma, the 2 peacemakers, and the 2 late ops, and Ida, you can get outside the DZ as well. So there's very much, like, you're not as restricted now. Your specialists are outside the DZ, and all you have to do is just clear a slight lane just to keep them pushing in. So you've got that forward projection of specialist capability, which can, if you need to push your tag or heavy infantry up to support, he can be there to respond in the event that they get locked down through like Oblivion or the like. He can stealth through repeaters, clear those out, reset at full, because the engineer just clears that reset state rather than taking a reset. So you're not resetting at -3, you're just resetting it full whip. He's just a good force multiplier for what you're typically attempting to achieve already.
Nice. That's a very good overview there of the blade ops. I think, I obviously had a little peek at the profile before, and it is really nice. I mean, as you were mentioning, Dan, like, it's minimatism -3 and BS-13 is a really nice combo. I'd be a little bit concerned about, I mean, it's shock immune, but it's still one wound. But I suppose as you point out, it's kind of, if you can hide it on a rooftop. And I suppose, am I right in thinking it's duos with tags?
Yeah, duos, yeah, with a Squallow 2 or the Squallow 1, because they both have duos and it's a wild card, so you can throw it right in.
Yeah, which is then great. I mean, you've got your engineer just running alongside the tag. I can see why that is a very, appealing new addition. What's next? Do we have anything else?
Next on the list is blockers, right? The next alphabetically, I misspoke. And blockers also, they're great. Again, within Neoterra, they're wild card. Well, they're not wild cards. I take that back. They can link with Fusiliers and Orcs. Sorry, Bolts. And they have the Fusilier tag with Fusiliers. So it's
they
still
can
a pure team.
Link with CSUs as well.
Yep. They can indeed. They don't count as CSUs, but that's usually CSUs or Harris. And they had the Bolt tag with Bolts. So the achievement of Bolt Link, it gives you a 6-sense hacker in either link you want to be in. They're actually Whip 13, which is great for Pano. They have Sensor, which is a nice little bonus to have. It's a BTS-3 hacker with an adhesive launcher, which is useful sometimes, plus and burst multi-pistol for close range. But really, it's a surprisingly decent hacker for 21 points, which isn't really cheap. But for a Whip 13 hacker in Pano that's pure, it's pretty good. It's like 6 points more than a Fusilier to be better in every way if you want a hacker. And it doesn't break purity.
That sounds like pretty good value, really.
So he's got an adhesive launcher, a nanopulsar, a flash pulse, a multi-pistol, para-CC weapon -6, but it's much of a muchness. He's got an X-Visor, sensor, pures with Fusiliers, so he's like Whip 22 on discovering against camo markers, so he's like rolling flats against a mimetism -6 camo marker in like cover.
And he has a biometric visor, which is a much maligned piece of equipment, but
it's still
it's
Whip 16 against
Whip 16 to discover a day. I'll take it.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good. I looked at the profile and I was like, adhesive launcher, what? Like, okay, nanopulsar, that's useful. Flash pulse, useful. But weird range bands. But I suppose it is absolutely not a gunfighter. It's not going to be close to gunfighting, or you don't really want it to be. It's doing that hacking, it's doing that utility stuff.
It can gunfight with a multi-pistol and the X-Visor, really, surprisingly, but that's about it.
I use him as a depth gunfighter in the event that a fusilier missile or like an ARO piece goes down, and then he just drops the fourth member after a bit, and then he goes on the point man as a Harris lead.
Yeah.
So he's still got capabilities, and then even then he's still whip like 22 to discover in a Harris as well. So he's able to lean into it. It's just not his primary purpose. So obviously with a burst 4 AP or shock gun or burst 3 DA round in that regards when he's in a Harris.
Yeah, it's surprisingly cheeky once in a while. It's not great, but if you shoot a warband on burst 4 on 9s at 24 inches, if you can bypass dogged or get burst 4 through the smoke, it's as good as a combi, but better because you have ammo selection.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Actually, I looked at the blocker and I was like, I'm not so sure about that. But
the amount of forking opportunities. It's the adhesive launcher and the hacking device as well. So if you get like anything that's hackable, he can 100% fork you into true bricking, being putting that adhesive launcher into you or a blue carbonizing, and it's like, here, take an adhesive round then. At like burst 3 in a Harris, and then you just go, well, while you're doing that, I'm just going to lock your armor down as well, and it's like, good luck, good soldering. Yeah, you know, you're stuck there now, so moving on.
Yeah, I actually really like that. That's quite a fun fork. It's like, it's not exactly deadly, but it'll really ruin your day. no matter which way around it goes.
So once the hackables carbonited and you've adhesive launched him, then you just load up with that burst 4 multi-pistol. So sure, it takes some setting up, but eventually like 3 orders is usually sometimes what you take to engage and to be able to lock it down completely, especially a tag or an opponent's primary gun piece. He's definitely got the tools to at least force it or engineer a solution to it.
Okay. Any further thoughts on the blockers? Surprise, surprise, cool unit.
I will typically take the 16-point blocker in a Bolt Harris purely because it really drops that point. Really drops that price point down. And then you just take a normal Bolt hacker because BTS-6 and Veteran is more, especially with 6 cents, is more than enough. So, like, taking your ARO Bolt Paramedic, your Bolt Hacker, and then the 16-point blocker, and then the NCA Machinist. You've got so many tools in that core. Probably able to solve practically every single classified, or even 90% of those classifieds that the classifieds are asking you to do in that.
Even surprisingly cheap for the models you mentioned with a Bolt multi-sniper and a paramedic. It's 114 points for a core that shoots in 19s. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Very good. But that pano, right? Nice.
Yeah.
Is there any other units in the reinforcements section, or just new to NCA worthy of note?
Oh. Yes.
If we speak about reinforcements specifically, Agnes Pereira has a cool REM driver profile that it's kind of neat to see more REM drivers around. I've only used it once or twice. I don't know if Bolt has used it more. I like Agnes, but she's not in NCA specifically.
Yeah. So the REM driver is cool, really, like the fact that she's not. So the Code Capital one is a good option, like if she brings it. I usually take 14 point option because I'm usually bringing a tag, so I need the points.
Yeah.
So the REM driver profile, though, especially if she comes in and you've got a bulleteer in NCA specifically, a bulleteer goes up to BS-13. It's like, and especially from I don't know if the REM driver token can be carried over into groups, like separate groups. I suspect it can, especially when she drops into reinforcements. Like if you have a Sierra still on the board, you can bump that bad boy up to like BS-15, and like especially with Evo Marksman. So, and then you've got like a BS-15 HMG on the table again, especially if you're in a degraded state that, you know, BS-15 Burst 4 is fairly good, especially on one profile like the Sierra.
Yeah, fairly good. So. yeah, I mean, even if you just did the Bulleteer, right? If you've got the Bulleteer with the Spitfire, Mimetism -13, and then you give it marksmanship because it is a repeater as well.
Yeah, it's BS 16 versus 5, Mimetism 6, and then Bird
6. Yeah, that's punishing potentially. Yeah,
so nice. Agnes alone is like a submachine gun. She's Web 13 sixth sense specialist with a template. Like she's cheap as chips, especially for what you get. Great third person for like a Svalheimer Harris, but organically she's not in NCA. She is in Code Capital though, because she's probably the one flying the ship. So yeah, I like Agnes. She's solid. I usually take her in my reinforcement pool with an NCO Spitfire, then a Blocker Hacker, and then Agnes on top. So I've got two Whip 13 specialists and a BS-15 Spitfire in the midfield from that point on, which can, if required, deploy in contact with the with the objectives, depending upon where they are. And then you just spend one order and it's like I'm already pressing the button. So you just remove the extensive need for orders just by deploying them in location to begin with, or at least nearby.
Nice. Any further thoughts, Dan?
Yeah, the other reinforcements profile of note that I really wish they added many profiles of Vanilla Pano, but there's a Pathfinder in Code Capital with a multi-rifle, and I really badly wish that had made it the actual game. I played a lot of Hawk-Islam. The Rafik, as we all know, has a Red Fury option. Having a multi-rifle option for Pano feels very Pano-Xianyan, superiority through firepower and all that. And having more options for your forward observer remotes would be great to have. It's only 2 points, but sometimes you have 2 points to spend on a list, and multi-rifle sounds great. Plus, I kind of fell in love with the remotes after ITS-14 and Takimoto's, but the multi-rifle Pathfinder I like a lot in reinforcements, and it did not appear in the update that applied the rest of the units to Vanilla Pano and NCA.
That is a shame. That's a really nice little bump to the Pathfinder there with the multi-rifle. That's cool. What about, I mean, we've got, dare I mention, Shona Carano or Richard Quay. Are they finding their way into your reinforcement pools or not?
Shona does, yeah, and reinforcements, yeah. Absolutely, Shona does. She does sometimes in regular lists, but in reinforcements, if you can drop a CC monster right in midfield, right next to people, she's fantastic. She'll get her points back, I don't want to say every time, but much more often than when she has to cross the field without smoke like a mook. Yeah, she's great in reinforcements.
Richard Quinn is still also solid. They bumped him up by a point by giving him a breaker pistol, plus one burst, so he's got like a burst 3, burst 4 breaker pistol, AP, BTS, it's not bad, MSV1 specialist, he's still solid, like the 24 points, he's a tidy little gunfighter that won't cost you too, like won't impose too much of a loss on if he does go down in a gunfight, so not too concerned, but he's able to solve a lot of classifieds, being a forward observer, MSV1, but yeah, he's fairly good.
I suppose the star of the show, perhaps, for reinforcements, though, is the Squalo Mark II.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It preserves almost everything you like about the Squalo's one, but it costs less and it's smaller and you lose 2 pips armor and ECM. It's a very fair trade-off.
Nice.
I'd agree.
You're looking at like AP, Spitfire. Are you ever taking the multi-marksman rifle?
Is that... Yes.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. People who pay attention to the IGL server would have seen Sneaky Snake's double Squalo 2 Varuna list, and the same list works in NCA, except you can splash in blade ops and make them both attack aware. It works really well, actually. A BS-15 multi-marksman is a backup gunfighter to your other BS-15 multi-HMD. Yeah, it does work pretty well.
It's NCA, or PNO in general. It's like Yuching will take a heavy infantryman and give him a multi-marksman rifle. PNO just strapped it onto a tag. It's just that line of concept. So
no man's made it there first. The Gecko exists, but
we made those tags first. Than the Gecko. We made their tags first. Squallow 2 is a excellent gunfighter. Not like it doesn't apply gun in the same way as Mark 1 because you can't bully in that same fashion. Like those 2 points of armor does matter depending upon the engagement. But if you're very smart with what you engage or prepare accordingly, then yeah, you should be able to just bully your way through regardless anyway. So we've also got this close combat Swiss Guard profile.
Yes, we do. Which is kind of an interesting one.
I like him.
I know you do. CC attack plus 6 and martial arts level 1 is, you know, it ends up swinging at 18s against other martial artists, which is okay. Not great, but it is a nice option to put in the midfield if need be. It's still a Swiss Guard that shoots like a Swiss Guard with a submachine gun, granted.
So you just deploy him straight down and then you pop him into like suppressive fire. And then they've got to figure out how they're going to unpick a 2-wound armor 6, BTS 6, like mimetism 6. Submachine gun, like his BS 15 in suppressive fire, still, it will take -2 for cover, -3, sorry, for cover because of flat range bans. But he has a CC weapon, a Tinbot Pulsar, like he's got a gun to drop into suppressive fire, he's got a template to trade and can potentially tank some opposing returns in the DA. Like, sure, he's not a CC monster, but he is a toolbox that you stick into a weak flank and you just reinforce that flank. Like, he just sits there and it's like you goes full Gandalf, you shall not pass, or at least he's going to make it very hard for you to pass. You just drop him into like a panic room, for example, as well, because he's still a headquarters troop. Drop him into suppressive. He's got a 10-inch template which hits on BTS. Like he's fairly solid still, because it's what?
Yeah, I mean, it's 21 to hit.
I would have liked that to kind of sit in the main inventory as well. Just kind of deploy him on a flank, and somebody walks through thinking that it's open, and all of a sudden a Swiss Guard just kind of 10-inch templates you, and then challenges you to kind of continue on type thing as well, sit behind cover. So we'll just shoot you or type thing. So
I like it.
A Tinbot, which is a nice
option. Yeah, I mean a Tinbot on BTS 6 is pretty like sturdy from a hacking perspective. Yeah, very nice piece. I mean, as I say, I've only looked at these very briefly in this, and I actually didn't see them. CC attack plus 6 is such a weird thing to see in a profile. But I suppose when he starts with CC 15, they have to find a way to like bump it up properly. that's a really cool piece. Cool. Do we have any other standout pieces in the reinforcement specifically that you'd like to talk about?
No, it's kind of odd looking at them because the reinforcing pieces, every other profile I can think of are just standard NCA profiles that NCA already had. Mm-hmm. So those are things we're used to if you play Neoterra. If you don't, sure, we can talk about the Aquila Guard, which is a personal favorite of mine. The Aquila Guard with the multi-marksman rifle is very, very good at clearing the midfield. If need be, he's a Whip 13 specialist. Multi-marksman, shoots at BS-15. Obviously, he doesn't have mimetism, but MSV-3 is quite good if I know you have used MSV3, but auto-discovering camera markers, especially in the midfield, it's not hard to have him go spend an order, discover, shoot, kill, spend an order to move, discover, shoot, kill, move on. And he can even push buttons. He's a great little profile.
Nice. Yeah, I can, having obviously not played that profile, but I use the Asura quite often in OSS, and I can vouch for the MSV3. You just sort of run into the midfield and go, what should I do? Oh, I'll just discover and kill this thing. Okay, I'll just discover and kill this other thing.
Yeah.
And all the power of camo, which is a lot, realized quite how powerful camo is until you can just take it away with no effort whatsoever. Very cool.
The automatic discover means he can sit from one end of the board and just go full Sauron. It's like, I discover you, and I discover you, and like, even if he's on minus like 15s, he still passes because it's an automatic succeed.
Yeah. You don't even need to, you don't need to roll or anything, do you? It's just success. Yeah. Very nice. Cool. Okay, well, should we take it into the sort of main army then? Obviously, we have a series of units that already exist in the faction, and we've got the blocker and the ops and the new squalor are all dropping in. And I think we also have Maximus came in quite recently. So yeah, how are they playing? Well, first of all, different in the normal faction now that they've been included, and how do they affect the sort of play of the faction, and how do they play themselves?
You want to go first, Bolt?
Sure. So Blade Ops picked up that full deployment plus 8-inch profile on top of the reinforcements, because there's only two, so you've only got the shotgun one and the engineer one. Shotgun one's still fairly capable. It's not my preferred one. It is probably a tidy little corner guard, especially to screen against dogged units and the like, purely because like no matter what he lays down, it's got shock. So one of the like Varangians come around and he just templates you, like, cool, like that Varangian's going to die with shock regardless. So it's a good way of sweeping those guys off so that they can't like immediately stopping it, so they can't go dogged and just keep punching into your units. So especially their tendency to kind of want to just drop templates on your fusiliers. So sure, you're punching down, but sometimes you just need to make that exchange. I played a couple of games with the Blades as an engineer in a duo with my Squallow in the past couple of games, and especially the forward deployment one. They have done well for themselves. The forward deployment one kind of, because he's out there by himself a little bit, kind of gets a bit crumped as a result, but that's through poor use of me because I'm still experimenting with him. So typically, like, I think it was in potentially power pack, I've deployed the Blade pretty much in contact with the Blade, touched the button, pushed him forward, dropped him prone, dropped him in suppressive, and then like force the bronze to kind of have to try and engage with that. So it's like bronze would be sitting at minus 9. So he wasn't doing well in that exchange, and the opponent had to bring a forward, a free Varangian, to drop a template down on him, which he didn't survive, unfortunately. But Varangian died. He had no more smoke in his army, and I stalled him out for a good 3 or 4 orders before that occurred. The Blade as an engineer in a duo really takes the steam or the sting out of even just stunned on an attack run with your tag. Just being able to just kind of have that tag, like the way they work them as a pair is that you position the Blade and then the tag kind of comes in, touches him, skims him, and then goes out with that remaining few inches or whatever to occupy a different location. And you just make the Blade the team leader, and as they're kind of like high-fiving along their way into a safe position, he just clears that state, and then you're just ready to rock and roll It's like, okay, like, let's re-engage again type thing. So it's, do you know how when you do that leapfrogging between back and forth from cover, it's like the tag kind of pushes back, touches the engineer, goes forward. And you can, like, even if the tag doesn't re-engage that order, you just kind of clear that state or recover that wound, and you just, it provides so much gas. And it's like, okay, cool, I've just taken a wound. And doing to recover before pushing on, that being able to duo, Bakunin can do this already, and a lot of other factions can do this, but this hasn't been available for NCA ever, because it was only the machinists and the NCA machinists which could fire team with bolts effectively. So the ability of being able to tag team that capability and typically take the NCO Squallow Mark II or the NCO Squallow, just for that amount of being able to leverage the lieutenant order, and getting five orders just out of the pair of them. Sure, it's about 100 points, but there's five orders there, and you've got a lot of capability. You've got a specialist right there. So as the tag moves to engage, the specialist or the blade ops can push a button while trailing behind him, ready to kind of just navigate the battlefield. So
that sounds really like a huge sort of quality of life improvement for the faction in general.
Very much.
You know, being able to, as you, that exactly what you've just described. I mean, I'm coming from Hack Islam, and also Aleph. I don't use tags all that much, but like to be able to just have this guy tagging along and as you say, contributing orders, but also just taking away, you know, when you have to try and, you know, take out a couple of flash pull spots or whatever, and oh, you fail the face to face and he gets stunned. To just be like, that's a way, I don't need to worry about that. Let's go again. That, yeah, must just be a huge sort of huge relief to be able to just do that without having to worry about, oh fuck, how am I going to sort this out?
Very much. It's the ability to kind of take two bulleteer Harrises, or a three-man core and a Harris, and if you have a bolt KHD or a hacker in one, you can slot that NCA machinist in there, and then take a fusilier hacker, and then take a bulleteer, because bulleteers are wild cards, and you take the fusilier hacker, you've got the bulleteer, and then you've got the blade ops engineer, and then you just kind of repeat carbon copy that, and then you've got a third machinist there available if you want to take a tag.
Yeah, as mentioned, it's a huge quality of life change with Neoterra. It's been hard not to take AVA2 in every list because they link with bolts, because they link with tags. You know, the ability to walk up and if you eat an EM mine or a wild parrot, that's fine. You can repair it. You can't use your O12's prestige anyway because you have TAC aware in the unit, so you're not losing much by command token. You need to reform the link. You can pick a bulleteer back up, and NCA's long time big problem is that, you know, both mentioned there are 9 units that start outside the deployment zone. One of those has a marker state, so you're usually fighting from your DZ upwards. And being able to get free movement, any free movement, but especially an extra 6 to 10 inches of movement on your tag to get out and take the fight to the enemy without spending a green order, it's great. It's great. It really changes the faction, makes play much more dynamically, makes it much less likely for your tag to get stranded in the midfield because of, you know, you failed a flash pulse roll or somebody dropped an EM mine and you got stuck or whatever. You can recover from mistakes and pull back to safety the way you want to do without risking a machinist or spending 4 orders to get a palbot out there or whatever. It's huge.
Nice. That reminds me, actually, of something I wanted to mention, slightly off topic here, but I wanted to talk to both of you about is the idea or the fact of Pano, which has always intrigued me and is something which I've seen, witnessed, and been party to many discussions and arguments about, the value of non-camo forward deploying units, which Pano has a lot of. I like them, but I know a lot of people don't. And I was wondering, for you two, obviously play these factions who, you know, you have these units sort of on hand all the time. Do you use them very often? Would you, you know, we've already talked about the forward deploying blade ops. but also the other pieces that you can deploy forward, which, you know, don't have the protection of camo. How do you leverage that? Do you use them very often? What's the general approach?
I do use them fairly often. I think both does as well. Obviously, if you go in second, you have to be much less aggressive for their positioning. Yeah. Infiltration or forward deployment doesn't mean put them on the line to which they can deploy if they can't be safe there. A Locust is still good. The Locust Killer Hacker is a common profile to be discussed because you can cyber mass back to a marker state. Its mimetism takes 6 once the marker state breaks. It has a breaker combi and BS-12, and it has decharges, which is a big lack of Pano a lot of times. If you need anti-material, it can be hard to get. Nock and Svalerheimer are similar. They're great. They're forward deployment plus 6. There's no marker state. So don't deploy them out 8 inches just to be templated by a Shaolin monk, and you'll be a lot happier with them. They're still fine for the deployment zone, a little bit overcosted, but you'll win the lieutenant role 40-45% of the time. And those times, if you had first turn and want to use more order efficiency to have your Mimdeg 6 marker attack, by all means do. Or your heavy infantry. Both will talk about the Knight Hospitaller forward deployment. Same thing. It's expensive. It's a hard sell. If you go second, it's a lot less valuable. But if you go first, it can be really effective.
So, and depending upon the mission as well, sometimes you just get handed first turn anyway. So you don't even need to win the LT role. Like if,
that's true.
For example, like something like Supremacy or one of the Quadrant the Control armory. Missions. Exactly. You're getting handed it. So you can be fairly aggressive with those assets. And by not having a marker state, you're not mentally handbraking yourself to have that marker state removed. You're like, I don't care. I don't have a marker state to lose. Let's crack on. So as a result, you kind of, like the fact that they've got stealth, and if everyone null deploys, then nobody's looking at them to discover them anyway. So it's a moot point.
And it, as your pano, so, there's a good chance you will get null deployed. As your NCA, people are going to expect bolt cores and tags. And so actually, if you come with something a little different, you can really exploit that opening.
Yeah, 100%. And like the fact that he's got stealth. So if you're running up against a vanilla list, which has no sixth sense, you just stealth through that repeater net, get into a position where you can engage from outside, like for example Moran, if they're up on a rooftop, like cool, he climbs up and you probably take a crazy koala on some other unit or whatever, you run an oxbot up, clear that crazy koala and clear his path, so he's using multiple different avenues. Cool, your crazy koala cleared my oxbot, I don't care. The fact that he can push through and get into a repeater net without concern, especially if nobody's looking at him, it's like the only time he really cares is that if there's a hard ARO being laid on top of this repeater net, because then he needs to break still. And if there's no ARO, it's like, I'm just going to keep walking. And walking and walking and walking and walking, and then it's like all of a sudden you're on an enfilade position getting models out of cover, and he's able to just really get into the opponent's force. So like if no one's looking at him, he doesn't need smoke, he doesn't need a marker state, all he needs is just orders fed into him and to go on a submachine gun rampage, because he doesn't have to choose between AP or shock, because he has both. He just chooses the AP and the BS attack gives him that automatically. So you're just going, I am just going to shoot you and keep shooting you and drop him into suppressive with the attack awareness order at the end of that run. And then let the opponent deal with him.
Even if going second, my most commonly taken Locust profile is the 25-point submachine gun wild parrot profile, because wild parrots are going second, you can still zone someone out. If your opponent leaves their Hacktau or their Sujan or their Tag or whatever in a position that's not completely safe and they don't account for the fact that you have a wild parrot for whatever reason, or they overextend or underestimate, a wild parrot is one of the most devastating things you can do, and a lot of times you can lay one down without even risking the Locust, because it's a perimeter weapon. and
they're quite rarely seen actually. Wide pirates, right? They are a perimeter weapon EM, right? Like an EM mine with an 8-inch range.
Yeah, almost. Obviously Morax don't care, but any other heavy unit has to be really concerned that they make their dodge in a -3, and if they don't, they're in for a very bad time with a submachine gun around the corner.
Yeah.
I like the Locust Killer Hacker. Yes, I do tend to use him a lot. The terrain total, the stealth is the real kicker. There's like my comparison between like the Nock and the Locust. The Locust has stealth, and that's what's gonna like really carry the day against those vanilla lists, because they just don't have sixth sense, and then they null deploy, and then it's like, you're just gonna give me the board, thank you. I am just gonna walk wherever the I want, because your repeaters can't stop me. You have nothing to shoot at me, so I'll go where I choose. And then, like, as for in those times where you've got mines, that Locust Killer Hacker just cybermasters and just keeps walking, because the mines won't trigger on him, as he has freedom of action of the table, especially if the opponent allows you to have freedom of action of the table.
Nice. I think that's really, really interesting, like the way you sort of construct that notion of NC, and I guess Pano to a great degree, other Pano factions as well. Because there isn't that much in the way of camo coming from outside of Pano, you sort of imagine that the faction is lacking for midfielders and all that kind of stuff, because you think, oh, camo is so powerful. But because you have such potent shooters, you're going to force those heads down. And then you don't need camo, as you point out, which I think is a really interesting notion. Like it's I've seen many times on Discord and in other online fora where, you know, people will decry how Pano is totally lacking in that kind of midfield quality pieces. But as you very well pointed out, they're not lacking. They just don't have camo. But for a large amount of the time, you don't need it, because you're going to shoot everything that's standing up off the table, or it's going to be down to begin with anyway.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning in that regard that in many other factions, your camo is a secondary office striker, we'll say. You see SAS or Usha or whatever that comes up, and they can do damage on turn one. And Pano does somewhat lack for midfielders like that if you go in second, because you don't have Marker Stage for protection. You can't safely deploy somebody, anybody in the middle midfield and say, I have a template, I'll be fine. It can be difficult to attack through other factions' camouflage markers, because they very often have shotguns or train rifles. But your midfielders, if you're going into a true null deploy, or if you're willing to spend the orders to move carefully in Cyber Mask, his bolt merchants, or just try to skirt your way around templates or clear the path or something else, they can be very effective. They just take prep. They're not self-sufficient the same way that camo marker might be. And that's a factional quirk. It's not necessarily a downside. It's different. It can feel like a downside if you expect to have an SAS equivalent and you don't find one.
Uma is there.
I love Uma.
She's got climbing plus. That alone makes her worthwhile, especially for 30 points. The burst 4 submachine guns, like surprise attack, BS-13, mimetism.
Like, yeah, mine.
She's got the kit, but sometimes like she becomes a bit too predictable, or sometimes you just like she doesn't have D charges, whereas the Locust does. So if you're going up against looting and sabotage and Uma can't do anything, for example, or Mind Wipe, whereas the Killer Hacker, like the Locust Killer Hacker, for example, in Mind Wipe, I mean, just spends that free irregular order it gets for being the Uber Hacker, Cyber Masks, and just goes on its merry way, and then just plants D charges everywhere or hacks into it, especially if it's not landing, so, and pushes its own buttons as well. But Uma is there. I've used her fairly solidly. She's fairly capable, able to just walk through those crazy koalas, climbing up and down and around, getting some really janky angles to, like, you just climb around the side of a building and just kind of peek out the side and you're able to see that one unit that bore the back angle of attack or whatever, and she's just burst flooring that bad boy from its back arc, just unopposed, and burst four AP out of cover in the back, still going to wreck things. Like even on a 10, it's like 50-50. It's like, cool, but you don't have any response. So it's about exploiting the skills they do have to get a result.
Very, very, very good point, which you could apply to, I suppose, all factions, really. I find it's easy to look at one from one faction to another and go, oh, they've got X, Y, and Z, and I don't have that, or they don't have what I have, so they must suck. But actually, it's not about what you don't have. It's about what you do have and what you can do. And they can do a lot, obviously.
So I find that if the unit is, or if the faction is relying on a hard, soft screen like repeater networks and so forth, and they clearly don't have a hard defensive measure in the terms of physical sense. So like if we take in cybersecurity concepts like the mission critical assets, and that's just one layer. And if you get through that layer, you've got to go to the next layer and the next layer. And then it's like you're able to pick apart those layers and then get to the nice, crispy, juicy part inside. So it's just a matter of just stripping away the defenses. They're asking you to invest in that. It's just about how you go about either bypassing it or efficiently removing it or eliminating it. So.
Thanks.
It's just another puzzle to solve, realistically.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for that slight diversion, talking about the broader notions around Pano tactics and strategy. If we bring it back to the units, I did want to talk about Maximus. Again, I come from an OSS background of late, mm-hmm. and He is a much maligned piece. Nobody seems to like him or want to take him. Do we feel the same way with NCA?
Not at all. Not at all. Because, one, he provides more close combat to a faction that typically hasn't had much close combat. And he leans into a method in which we're able to support through, like, repeater coverage machinists and the like. Maximus, I've heard, is maligned because he doesn't have a template or a close quarters option within, like, inside 8 inches. Sure, I get it. Dodge with him or just shoot with him, either way. Ideally, you'd be dropping him into suppressive during reactive turn once you have that option, because then he doesn't have a bad range band. He's still dodging on 13s. He's still got, like, damage 17 AP CC or AP DA close combat attack. I've taken him plenty of times, and he's hit some dirt a couple of times. But again, as you're learning how to use him, it's the same concept with using those non-marker specialists. Like, you clear his path for him. Or you find an open flank and he's just going to go up that side and then start moving inwards and just clearing house. So he either shoots them or hits them, punches them in the face. It's strange that he's not...
punch pretty hard as well.
Yeah.
Damage 17, APDA.
Yeah, cannot be...
24, that's wild.
Yeah. He's MBW, which, like, oh, he needs martial arts. He doesn't. He basically has effectively martial arts against martial arts fighters. Like, he strips away the martial arts.
He has, like, three martial arts. With a CC base of 24, he doesn't have martial arts, but he has natural born warrior, so he's never getting that reduced unless it's, like, CC minus something.
Right. Yeah,
which is fairly rare. I mean, he's a bit of a beast.
One of the two, yeah, so...
The natural born warrior is surprisingly applicable because it cancels the plus damage portion of martial arts, and it makes his arm 7 much more valuable if you're going to use him.
That's a really good point.
For me, I like Maximus, but I like him more in Swallowheimer because the Yotam dominates the list and Maximus is easier to slide in with the rest of what you want. And Neo Terra, because he can't duo, because he costs more than a Squallows 2, the Squallows 2 is an easier fit. If you're running a Maximus list, you are running a bit of a Maximus list. You don't have the same long-range fire superiority. And
I
you're
just
running
take
him...
two of them.
You can take
I just
two
take,
of them.
Yeah, I just take the NCO Squallow Mark II and Maximus, yeah, if, and that's 142 points.
If you're
and then
do
you're still
that,
able
to have
yeah.
another gun to clear the way, he's great. He's great once yeah. he gets up close. If repeaters are cleared and he can get up close where he wants to be and do dirty work, he can be very effective. Yeah.
So it's strange that OSS doesn't, like, especially considering they haven't had any close quarters operators of his pedigree. He exemplifies the close assault. Like, sure, he's hackable, but most units are. Just accept the fact that something can be hacked and move on. Clear the repeater or kill the hacker, and there's no issue.
I must say, from the new best units, OSS has day ones now, and they are.
Exactly. And they're still hackable as well because they're ranked.
Yeah, they are. But,
like, you have in OSS, you have killer hackers of a greater pedigree than what NCA is able to pull. You have the ability to neutralize the hacking network, conduct that info war fight. First turn, send out your whip 15, whip 16 killer hackers with NWI and just neutralize the hacking, and then the repeaters don't matter. So, you know, and then you're able to just ram this 3-wound armor 7 BTS 6 like piece of metal into their face and just prompt anything. So at the moment you remove that defensive measure. So your only concern is he's hackable. Remove the hackable component by taking the hacking support. Use the alternate parts of your list rather than the one component to achieve an effect. So take the hackers, kill the hackers, problem solved. Like, then you don't have to worry about them. And then you can just, like, oh, no templates. Oh, well, I'll just tank it on my armor 7. Thank you.
Yeah. And you dodge
cool. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's very fair. Yeah, he's also alarmingly Sorry. Good dodger for attack. I mean, from an OSS perspective, I think I'm only saying what I've heard. I personally never select him because he's quite expensive, and OSS is already filled to the gills with expensive solo pieces.
He in OSS would work well, similar to in a fashion that Dan uses Max in Spa as a supporting piece. His other units will do the stuff, and the moment somebody starts to clear with him, he rushes, I assume, just going off our conversations, Max to kind of block that path off. So in that regard, like, you could potentially run like a similar force construct with, like, I around with the tools in OSS. I don't actually,
Because I run him in Spellerheimer with, you can still fit two Karhu foil box and Harris's and Max and have huge firepower at long range. And Maximus is the close range that you need then. And you can cover the whole board with foil box. And you can feel great about it. OSS, a little bit more difficult. Your long range guns are Dakinis and they're only so shooters. You can buff them to be better. It's a different thing. You don't have Karhu, and that's probably for the best. If OSS had Karhu, it would be a very different faction, but but it is different.
It would be
cheap, long range,
very much stronger faction.
It would be that. Yeah, it would be.
Yeah. I mean, I love OSS, but
The only I have against Maximus is I really wish they had not made his non-lieutenant version cost SWC. Make it zero for both. It doesn't have to be half an SWC for the non-lieutenant. I really wish it was zero. That's the only real hard downside I have against him. If you're using him with a purpose and a plan, he'll do exactly what you asked for, but he shouldn't cost Swift.
Okay, well, I think we've gone through most of these units. Is there any other things that are standing out? I know we've talked at length about the Blade Ops and the Blocker in reinforcements, but I suppose the same kind of rules apply, so to speak, in the normal context. Is there anything else that you want to call out?
With the changes since reinforcements got added and since Raven Eye, the Squallow 2 and the blades and the blockers with the ability to make cheaper bolt links, with the ability to bring along engineers with the bulleteer links to make them much more useful, because as Bolt mentioned, bulleteers are wild cards in Neoterra. You can make a link of a fusilier, a bulleteer, and a blade, as mentioned. The additional order efficiency, you know, for me personally, I don't love order stacking within a 15 units list. I don't think it's super healthy for the game, but that's where we are in N4. The ability of NCA to go run feasibly a 19 or a 20 order list with two tack awares for two tags that are fairly cheap with Squallow 2s, two tack awares for Blade Ops, and NCA order being used in a Squallow, it's a quantum leap in terms of what NCA can do in terms of projecting those great guns that it has. And it's cheap enough and varied enough that with NCA, because you can bring a gun for every situation, and you've always been able to, you can bring a Swiss Guard and an Aquila Guard and a Linked Orc Feuerbach in the same list and not really hurt for it. You can solve your problems with guns, and now you can solve your problems with guns and with orders and engineers to fix those guns, which is part of what it's been lacking. It's been a bit vulnerable to hacking, and Pano in general can be vulnerable to hacking. Big guns tend to be one wound with mimetism, or two wounds and hackable. There's no Uteros or the like, or a bear that's a multi-wound attack piece. You don't have that still, but having an engineer that can link pretty freely with the guns you want to be using is really good for the faction. It makes it feel like it's brand new for me.
That's really cool. That's really cool to hear. As I mentioned before we started the recording, I did briefly have Neoterra army. I never got to use it. Models are very cool, but I had an overload of models of armies at that time, and Neoterra unfortunately had to go away.
But, I started Neoterra and N3, where the joke was that Neoterra was an Aelif Sectorial with Pano support, because you ran a Garudas and Devas and all the rest, and the Pano units were only so-so. Bolts were bad at the time. Tags weren't much used in N3. It feels much more like Pano Xianya now, and you use Aelif units to support instead of the other way around.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see. Yeah, I mean, we haven't even mentioned the, as you said, the Garuda and the Deva. Both, I would say, from an OSS perspective, very useful pieces. Both with, you know, really good applications. I mean, they obviously, as you say, if they were more important before, they're now, you know, fallen away because you've got so much more Pano, so to speak.
So much more Pano and so much more options. I mean, if you played N3, you know, MSV1 was dramatically worse than it is now. So the Deva MSV2 was very useful. The Garuda's ability to combat drop when every hacker had access to control jump, not just evil hackers, was nice. And now it's different. And like I mentioned at the start, it feels like you can link Fusiliers, Orcs, CSUs together. You can add in blockers. You can link your tags, engineers. Bolts have surprisingly versatile links now with Bolt, Machinist, NCA, that is. Uma, Blades. There's a lot of options in terms of how you construct your fire teams. And you still have those overwhelming pieces people think of when they think of NCA in the Aquila heavy machine gun, the Swiss Guard missile launcher, if you were that sort of person, the Swiss HMG. There's a lot of options, and you do lack for fast movers. There's no motorcycles, but other than that, NCA is still great.
So NCA as well has the only way of getting a Whip 15 lieutenant outside of MO within Pano.
It does that, but, yeah.
You yeah, have that. Whip 15. That's the Diva.
Okay, yeah, of course, yeah, Diva. Yeah.
So it ranges cool. from like the 23.1 right up to like the 27.1 with the Diva bot. Like, sure, it's super advertised, but you can take efforts to protect it. And with NWI, it's fairly resilient.
And the Diva bot as well.
Yeah, and you can take two of them. So you can, if you want to, invest in that 54 points to get a Whip 15 LT and a Diva bot, or 26 points to get the Depoy LT. Some people don't, like, especially if you're fighting for first turn or you want your choice of, then yeah, taking a D.Va LT and putting it in Group 2 is not a massive imposition. It's just organically fitting it is not as easy as just slotting it straight into a Fusilier core or taking an Auxiliar LT, for example. So that's the main constraint there. But you still have D.Va hackers, D.Va forward observers, like to WIP 15 specialists as well. Sure, they start in the DZ, but you kind of already at that point regardless. Yeah. It's just like you take a D.Va KHD, slot it into Group 2. I prefer the Hexar for its ability to hit and deploy and just sit there and then like let somebody come into it and then just stage dive over the top of them. Whereas like the D.Va bot's kind of on the table and broadcast it. So it's like it's pros and cons. You just gotta measure up with what you want. But you've still got a WIP 15 lieutenant and WIP 15 specialists if you require. So
I think the only other thing I would say, especially in the current meta where we've all become Australia and it's tag heavy, is the Ulan as a definitional piece for NCA. You know, it carries the HMG, which is expensive, but the Feuerbach version, or the Feuerbach equipment, I should say, and the Ulan has been more and more useful as N4 has gone on. I see tags in most of the matches I play. Assuming you play an Ariadna or something, and even then sometimes we see a tag. And the ability of the Ulan to inflict ridiculous damage, it's almost as damage as an Azra Eel without the luck component. It's reliable, it does huge damage to tags. Tags are a very common component of meta, and although it's expensive at almost 90 points, a Marker State BS-15 surprise attack versus 3 Feuerbach, you almost never regret taking it. At least in a list 2, you should have one somewhere, because if you see a Salamandra or a Zeta, the Ulan is a critical threat to it.
Yeah. And he doesn't care about repeater states marker states as well, because he just marker states right past them. He's very much a predator in a sense that it's like a Jagdpanzer, like those ambush tank hunters from World War II and stuff. He'll just wait. And like, if a salamander is just still sitting out watching ARO on return, then that thing is going to die, because every HRMC is still burst one in reactive unless they've been put in suppressive. So you prowl around the edges looking for that enfilade fire, trying to catch him out of cover, and the Feuerbach exploits. If one gets through, you still have the opportunity to get at least 2 wounds in before he jumps back into total cover as well, rather than just popping it with the multi-HMG, where if you get one through, he gets 1 wound. So now you need to go again. You still got 2 wounds. So like, if 2 wounds get through with the Feuerbach, he's popping like close to 4 wounds, and that tag is probably either most likely unconscious if he fails all the saves. So he's definitely the premier anti-tag hunter. And in a fight between the Cutter and the Erland, it depends on who gets revealed first, because the next one's coming downrange with the guns.
Yeah.
So because realistically, a Cutter is going to be dodging if it's been revealed first, and the Erland is able to get outside of 32 and impose like minus close to 12 or 15 on top of the Cutter through surprise attack, its own mimetism, a bad range band for the multi-HMG, and then cover on top. So those 4 things on top, you just like, sure, you're hitting on potentially 6s, but he's not shooting back. So, you know, as I said, it just comes down to who gets revealed first in terms of which gun is going up against the, but most other tags, apart from like Sphinx and stuff like that, all the other marker state tags, it's ultimately who gets discovered first. The fuel early on has already discovered because the other ones don't have a marker state, so
he and knows where the they are. Is also, if you're stuck, if you get stuck and you need, you know, you have it on ARO for whatever reason, You know, the Feuerbach is so much more of a useful weapon in that setting as well.
Yeah.
And you're still hopefully using your mimetism. Yeah, I mean, it's ARM 6 BTS 6, so it's not super resilient as far as tags go, but
it's not an MBT. It uses mobility to gain a positive engagement for itself. So you don't want a fair fight with the Erlan. You want to, mind you, it can still take on those hard AROs, the lighter AROs, especially with its HMG. It's still a damage 16 HMG. You go up against a riot, go a missile launcher, you get inside 24, because it's got the marker state to do so. And then you just cap it with BS 15 versus it's BS 10. So you've got the odds there. And the missile launcher won't scare it too much because if it discovers, you just shoot it unopposed with the fuel bark. And if it delays, then you just keep moving until you're under 24. For example, if people are concerned about a right gull missile launcher, and then you just re-camo and then walk on back. It's still a capable tag. It's just needs some handling, and it's not as straightforward as going, I have an MBT, rush it forward and apply gun to solution. You have to finesse the gun.
Nice. Well, I'd like to think we've covered all the highlights. Are there any final thoughts that either of you have about Neo Terra Capitoline Army?
I think I would just, for me, reiterate what I said before. Neo Terra gets a lot of flack and online discourse and I think a lot of that reflects how relatively uncommon Neo Terra is. People haven't seen it since its most recent tune-ups. If you're interested in Neo Terra, give it a try. You'll probably like what you see. It now has TAC awareness and very linkable fire teams, which is a somewhat recent change since Grave and I, if you haven't looked the past couple of years, in addition to all the things that made NCA great before. It's a whole new sectorial, and it's probably better than you think if you haven't looked at it recently.
And to add on to that, if you're concerned about it because it's in the out-of-production component of the app, the only models that are out of production for it are the Erlan and the Auxilia. Everything else is currently in production. There's probably more than what can be said for a lot of the current in-print armies. So for an out-of-print army, it's certainly very well supported.
Well, besides bolts, but those are in the reinforcement pack, yeah.
Yeah, I've got 19 of them. I had 30. I gifted some and sold some to some mates who didn't have any, so.
And you still have 19?
Yes.
Good gracious.
I've got enough to make two core fire teams, and I gave away a couple boxes to new panel players in my old meta too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, okay, great. So all of you WIP 12 listeners out there dreaming of starting an NCA army, you know where to go begging and asking desperately for bolts, because they've been hoarded, guys. They've been hoarded.
I mean, I will say, joking, but not really. If somebody wants a tick filleting, I do have one spare left. If you send me a message in Discord, I'll mail it to you for free. I'm not kidding.
There you go. I think on that wonderful moment, I think we should end there before even more ludicrous things are said by people.
Thank you.
Okay, stop. Thank you, Trent, Antipode and Bolt. Thank you, Dan and Xindrides. My name is Thomas Diomedes, and this has been WIP 12. I hope you enjoyed this NCA review. If you have any questions or comments, head over to the IGL Discord, and we can chat about it there. One quick reminder. There is also the IGL painting competition currently underway. I run that, and if you want to talk about that as well, I am available also on the IGL Discord. That runs until the 20th of March. So if you enjoy painting, maybe you've got some NCA you want to paint, there's a good opportunity there for you to show off your skills. But otherwise, I think we're done. Thank you very much. Thank you, Trent.
All good, man. Have it out.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
And we'll call that a day. Cheers. Bye-bye.